Africans, we are one of the smartest people on planet Earth. We are very ambitious. Despite our conditions growing up, we have put the test of time.
Yes.
We have such grit. We have such zeal. We are so hardworking, but we are our worst enemy. And we, in this case, is the system, the government, I mean, the countries, you know. So I feel like we have to come together to really do better, because I feel like we, the continent of Africa, probably has the highest brain drain in the world.
Absolutely.
Because all the smart people, all the visionaries end up just leaving the continent and going to the West and making the West better and contributing better to the economy of the West instead of contributing towards the economy of Africa.
Welcome to the Living African Podcast. My name is Anya Fumbat, and I am your host. In this podcast, we ignite powerful conversations that dare to challenge cultural and societal norms, as well as share experiences that empower our African community. Through the heartfelt stories of diverse guests, we explore depths of their experiences, from heart-wrenching moments to exhilarating triumphs, both within Africa and the diaspora. Our mission is to normalize these open discussions, encouraging all Africans to find strength through vulnerability. Together, let's use our voices to challenge and uplift one another, fostering understanding, acceptance, and tolerance within our community. So join me as we embark on a journey of discovery, learning, and growth, bringing immense value to our African heritage. Welcome to Living African Podcast. Let's begin this transformative voyage together.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Living African Podcast. I am your host, Anya Fumbat, and I have here with me today a special guest all the way from Nigeria to Houston, and he is Bayonle Arashi. And he's a founder of the Midas Football Academy, which is such an empowering football academy in the city of Houston. And so I'm super, super excited to get deeper into this conversation with you, because I know it's definitely going to be empowering. And I just want to know, well, before anything, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm very excited. Thank you so much for having me. And I just want to appreciate you for the great job you're doing.
Thank you so much, Bayonle. Before we even get to have the audience know more about you, I just want to let them know how we met, actually. And this was through the African Think Tank, which is the non-for-profit organization that I led, or at least I lead, in Houston. And this organization is actually just bringing Africans and friends of Africans together, restoring that sense of community within us, or at least empowering that sense of community within us, and, you know, just getting us to network and collaborate. And that happens on the last Fridays of every month. Bayonle has faithfully attended each and every event since our inauguration a couple of months ago. And that's why I pointed you out. I literally recognized you, because in every photo you had to be there. In, like, it's like I always saw you in every single event, and I truly appreciate it, because it just goes to show that you deeply understand and appreciate the essence of this organization, and you're willing to even participate and contribute your time to, you know, attend these events and meet new people. So I'm super excited to really have you and to get to have the audience also know about you and your story. Can you tell us more about you?
Well, thank you so much for all those positive feedback and things that you said about me. It just goes to confirm what is generally being said, that if you hang around barbershop enough, you're going to get a haircut, right?
Yeah.
I come to the think tank really not just for me to show up and just to be in the photo, but more importantly, to be a part of what the community is doing to bring about, whenever my continent, my people, Africans are doing something, I just feel I have to be there, because I've always thought that the challenge that Africa has, or have had over the past many years, is lack of cooperation, and secondly, more importantly, of a leader of or leaders that will work together to make things happen. So I want to say thank you to you guys for doing the great work you're doing at the African Think Tank. My story is, I'm excited to share with you. I'm always very excited to share it. I was born in the city of Ibadan in Nigeria about some 43 years ago. And both parents are from the same state. And growing up was very challenging. As you know, a young boy growing up in a typical African home with both, I was very lucky to have both of my parents in my life. I was the first child of the marriage and the first son. And I'm sure you know, based on that, as in an African home, as the first, you are the pattern to everything the family has to set. So there's a lot of responsibility on you from birth, and there's a lot of pressure on you to also grow. So for me, I think I grew up really fast because I saw the challenge there. But unfortunately, my dad, after a couple of years, I think when I was about 10, 11, for some reason, he had a second wife. So my family became a polygamous family. So, and that was something that I think I never thought was going to probably happen. And I did not know how much of impact it was going to have in my life. Later on after me, they have two other boys and then my only sister and then another boy. So altogether, there are five of us from my mom and a couple of other kids from all the wives that my dad had. I had my elementary education in Ibadan. We moved to Ogun State. I had my middle school there. Then I went back to Ibadan for my high school education. And then I went back to Ogun State. I went to the Government Technical College where I did a three-year diploma studying broadcast and broadcast communication. I graduated in 1999, and that was what set me on the path of my profession as a broadcaster. I got my first job in August of 1999 at one of the fastest growing media organization in Nigeria, MITV. And and I was employed as a technician. It was a very interesting thing. It was a very interesting story. I started working as a technician for a couple of months, but I discovered that I was always very curious. I've always been very curious. So as a technician, it was the days of analog broadcasting. I'm going to power on the transmitter, and I will just leave my duty post, really, and I will go to the master control room, and I will just be watching. I was interested in what they were doing there. I wanted to see more. I did not know my chief engineer was watching. So there was a day after, like a couple of months, he was like, son, I don't think you're going to be an engineer, so I'm going to transfer you to the production department. So this confirms the importance of having a mentor and really someone being a leader watching over you. And that was how I got into production from engineering department. And I started learning every other thing, how to direct, how to produce. And then from there, after a couple of years, about 2 years, one of my supervisors left the organization, went to another one, which was the biggest back then, Africa Independent Television. And then he called on me, it was like, because they called me Whiskey, partly because I could do a few good things at work. So he said, I want you here. And there off I go. I joined Africa Independent Television in the late 2002. And that was really where my career really blossomed as a broadcaster. I moved on to be a production director. But more importantly, because the organization was so big, they moved me to the sport department. So I was covering sports. I was covering soccer. And that was how I had my first chance of traveling outside of Nigeria to cover Africa Cup of Nations. And then I went to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And that was how my passion for soccer started taking shape. You could see the pattern there that I had. I moved from one end to the other. And when I traveled and came back, I saw that football was bigger, which we call soccer in the US, than what a lot of us think it is. So when I came back in 2006 from the FIFA World Cup in Germany, I started thinking, what can I do just beyond broadcasting? And I'm like, okay, I called a friend of mine that didn't have a very successful career in football. He played in Ghana. I said, I think I want to have a soccer academy. He said, okay, let's do it. So in 2008, it took us another year or two. We started an academy and we started training young boys, 13, 14, 15 year olds. In 2009, we had our first success through one of my friends that I made in Germany. He said, why can't you bring your kids? That was the early days of internet in Africa, if you can remember, in Nigeria, Yahoo days, where you can easily send emails. So he was seeing what I was doing. So he invited the team to a tournament in Germany and Denmark. And believe it or not, we were granted visa to go. So I was able to lead my academy in 2009 to a soccer tournament in Germany and Denmark. Mm-hmm. And we won both tournaments in Germany and Denmark. And my eyes just suddenly opened up. Okay, I think I can do more. So in 2010, I left my job with AIT to start my own broadcast production company. But I was still doing some other freelance job with the broadcast company. And that was my path into broadcasting. And I think that should be enough introduction for now. There's still so more to tell you. But that's about the beginning. And that was what formed the Guy by Only Arashi today.
Nice, nice. That's such an empowering story, considering the fact that, you know, you had so much to lose as the firstborn because you had everyone looking up to you. You had so much responsibility. And I mean, I haven't really known you personally to a certain extent, but I could see the passion in you every time we met, every time you attended one of our meetings at the African Think Tank. And that just goes to show how much passion you put into everything that you do. So tell us about that first football academy and how far you went.
Very interesting question. Thank you. It was not as easy as I thought it was going to be. Let me say it that way. But as every good thing that always starts, there is always a seed planted by someone. Looking at the way the game was growing outside of Nigeria, I figured or I thought it was going to be easy for me to interpret and do the same thing in Nigeria. But unfortunately, the system was not in place. And that is always a big challenge. And when I mean system, you and I probably understood what I mean, that where you can easily go to, you can find a place for your team to train, you can find grants to apply for, you can find things that can make whatever dream you have as a young entrepreneur in a country that has system in place, things will go on for you. But that didn't happen with Midas Football Academy. We struggled a lot, but I think because of what you mentioned earlier, I used the word passion. For me, it was more important for me to see some of those guys, those young kids that really, really dependent on us to make a career out of them. Every time I look at their eyes and I see that they have big, big dreams. It wasn't even as big as it is now back then. I'm talking about football, the amount of money that is being made now. We were not looking at the money. I was just looking to make a change, to give young guys a chance to be mentored, to use their young energy that I had, and I didn't have it, to channel it towards something that can develop their career. But we faced a lot of challenge. After that success in Germany and Denmark, and we came back, I decided to do a fundraising because I felt it would be better if we have our own facility and the kids can have a place they can call their own every day to come, train, go home. And even the dream was for us to have them accommodated for a couple of years to live in there, because that is how it works in really every good society in Europe, in the Americas. For you to produce a good seed, you have to plant them on a good ground and nourish them and continue to water them until they are really ready for you to harvest. But we didn't have the same opportunity. The system was very frustrating. Every request to play for a training ground was not granted. So I started seeing it like, okay, maybe this would not be happening here. So in 2013, I started thinking that I need to start finding a way to make my own money. I never had a plan to relocate, to live overseas. It was never in my thoughts, because I'm someone that believes so much in Africa. It confirms why you said what you said earlier, that you've always seen me consistently come to every African Think Tank event, because I believe that if we have everything that is needed in our continent, there is no need for you to be moving all around looking for what is not lost. You know, but yeah, if you don't have it, you also have to have the capacity to go and earn it. I've always been that. My dad raised me to say, if you want something, go and earn it. Nobody's going to hand you anything. So I started discussing it with my coaches that I think we might need to start finding other ways. In 2014, the opportunity came. There's an organization called Atlas Call in New York City. They give young African entrepreneurs age 35 and younger the opportunity to come to the United States for a year and study a nonprofit and learn how business is done. I qualify for, if I'm sure, and I'm not sure what class 11 or 12, I go to the finals of that Atlas Core Fellowship program. It was between me and a female from Kaduna State. By the end of the day, she was picked ahead of me, and I didn't have the opportunity. But I got a U.S. visa towards that process. So I came to the U.S. early 2015. I said, okay, since this thing is not working here, I left. So the Nigerian Academy was left behind to my staff to continue until this day. It is still functional, but not still at the capacity that we want. But the dream is still right there, solid. I'm hoping that we can show this podcast on video, because behind me, you can see the design. I look at it every day, every day. This is what I'm going to build in Nigeria, and I'm going to build it in the United States. So that's where we are right now.
Amazing, amazing. You have such powerful dreams, and with your drive and passion, there's no doubt, I'm very, very, very sure that they will come to pass. So just keep doing what you're doing. So far, I mean, I'm also very sorry, by the way, to hear about the hurdles that you experienced in Nigeria from the system. I feel like this is one of the biggest things that prevents us from progress, right? Because for the most part, and even from my own experiences doing business, especially in Cameroon, it's quite frustrating because the system is just not accommodating. And no matter how you try, it's just like there's always one extra thing that blocks the way, or one bribe that you have to make, or just unnecessary payments. And those are one of the things that we're trying to tackle and address through the African Think Tank to make things easier for us as Africans to deal with one another, and also to simplify the systems that will accommodate us. Because Africans, we are one of the smartest people on planet Earth. We are very ambitious. Despite our conditions growing up, we have put the test of time. Yes. We have such grit. We have such zeal. We are so hardworking, but we are our worst enemy. And we, in this case, is the system, the government, I mean, the countries, you know. So I feel like we have to come together to really do better, because I feel like we, the continent of Africa, probably has the highest brain drain in the world. Absolutely. Because all the smart people, all the visionaries end up just leaving the continent and going to the West and making the West better and contributing better to the economy of the West, instead of contributing towards the economy of Africa. So I'm really sorry that you had to go through that. So far, how has that academy impacted the young boys in Nigeria?
Absolutely. For the few years that we operated, you remember I mentioned the story of the young kids that had the chance to go to Germany and Denmark in 2009 as under 17. Many of them today, about six of them right here in the United States with the minimum of bachelor's degrees, right? They are here in the US study. They're all men now. Some of them are married, have moved on. But I think that was the most powerful seed that was sown in 2008, because all these kids were the foundation of the academy. So that is the direct answer that I could give. A couple of them had a decent professional football career. And you already said it, so I don't need to repeat it, about the failure of the system. And it is even worse when you watch the TV. For the few times I watch TV once in a while, and see the corruption, the deep corruption in the system. Like, you that you have an idea to make the country better. Because I'm going to repeat it again. My plan back then was just for me to be able to either borrow or rent a 12 acre of land, have some money to build a couple of fields, build an accommodation. And that was all I wanted. That was all I ever wanted. And that was all somebody, maybe a local government chairman or a commissioner or a governor, could have said, okay, let's establish it. And I'm not just talking about it because I wanted it. I actually made efforts. I mean, you organize fundraiser, you send letters upon letters, you attend events, you try to see the, as we call them, the people or the person in power. Somebody just doesn't want you to see them, but you see other people profiting from it. This is just some of the few frustration that you and I understood that goes on back there. But I never let that deter me, because I think I am made of, there's two things that I learned from a couple of my mentors that I've learned from over the years, that two things shaped us. Your experience shaped you, and your environment also shaped you. For me, my environment, coming from a polygamous family, coming from a very high level of poverty, when I hear people talk about poverty here, All I can just do is just to have a grin on my face or a smile, like, you don't know what you're talking about. I know what the definition of poverty is. I'm from that poverty. So I know what it is like. That is one of the things that shaped me. Also, my experience coming from that I could only have a vocational education, that I could only earn a diploma. I had a chance to go to a university, but I mean, I just look at it that this is not for me. So, and I'm like, I just want to chase my dream. And if you look at it over the years, for some of the best entrepreneurs, some of the biggest brain, including America, not many of them went all the way up to getting all the degrees in the world, but they were still able to do great, great work. I eventually did go when my supervisor kept pushing me, but over the years, the academy keep operating. Right now, what we do is we have kids ages 13 and 17 years old that trains 4 times a week. They come in Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and on Saturdays, they play games just for us to keep it going in Nigeria. But because I came in here in February 2015, still with the same dream when I arrived in the United States, I only just came with just my bag and big dreams, right? And I didn't tell myself it was going to happen for me in a day, even though I thought it was going to be easier than I found out that it is right now, because it's not been easy. I have to tell you that it's taken almost 9 years of constant chasing, but still the dream became born again here in the United States. I got here in 2015 to try to find a way to get into sports, but it didn't happen because the person I came to meet in the US, and that's another very sad story, but I know we don't have all the time in the world, but I surmounted that particular hurdle as well. Found myself in Houston in the summer of 2015, working for a local Nigerian television channel, Millennium Broadcasting Channel here in Houston. And I was managing that channel for 2 years, just doing all the things, cameraman, director, producing. Thank God for the experience in Nigeria. And after a couple of years doing that, I'm like, how can I get involved? So a friend of mine was like, there is a referee, there's an opportunity refereeing soccer here. I said, okay, I can get involved. So I became a soccer referee in 2016, towards the end of 2016. And I started refereeing. And that was how I got into the game in the US. Going on the field, I've always looked for opportunity of how to just be around young people, impact them positively, just help. Just want to be the person that I didn't have, you know, to other younger people. And from there, I also started seeing other opportunities that there is an organization of coaches, United Soccer Coaches. I became a member and I started going to the convention. I went to the convention in 2017, 2018. It is called the United Soccer Coaches Convention. It is the largest gathering of anyone that is involved in the soccer business in the United States or in the world. In 2018, when I went there, I saw the opportunity. I'm like, this is what I've been trying to do. Seeing people talking about them having academy, having this. But then again, I saw another problem. I saw that the way soccer was being done in the US is totally different from where we come from. In my academy in Nigeria, kids that can play the game do not have the money. They are from poor homes. And that's where, that is why you have had some of the best talent being exported into the West, using your word now, coming here to really have a lot of success. But in the United States, they have a system they call pay to play. That means if you want to play soccer, you have to have some money. If you don't have some money, you cannot play. And I didn't know how to even go about that. So I had to start paying more attention, read tons of books, keep listening to leaders across the board. And in 2009, I had that moment of epiphany, like, okay, I think it's about time. So I started thinking, I think I can have Midas Football Academy here. Nobody has done it before, right? Nobody is doing anything that can say, okay, let kids come and play even if they don't have money. I think I would do it. And I decided to do it. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Nice, nice. Thank you so much for sharing that. I probably will just take us a little bit back just because I want to get a little bit more personal, because I want to have our audience get a better understanding or at least a deeper understanding of the essence of Midas Football Academy. Because as you've said, the demographic is typically like young kids, specifically, at least for now, young boys who come from poor homes. And you'd mentioned that you wanted to be somebody to them, where you wanted to be the person you never had when you were growing up. Now, getting back to when you were growing up, and I'm getting a little bit personal, like I said, how did the dynamics in your household and even in your community affect you as a young firstborn boy in Nigeria, in Ibadan?
Wow. A lot. It really affected me. I mean, my dad, yes, now that I'm a man, we are friends, I forgive him, but my dad was, if my dad was to be here in the United States, it would probably be in prison because he would have been probably locked up for child abuse. I mentioned my age earlier, I'm 43 years old, but as old as I am, I have a max on my body of typical assault, like for something that you should just tell your child, hey, I mean, I know the Bible says the rod.
Spare not the rod and spoil the child, yes. Something. Or spare the rod and spoil the child.
Yes, I know the Bible said that, but I feel being a parent now, I have daughters and I have a son. I know the difference between using the rod to correct your child and really destroying them, you know, because for me, I think it got so bad that at a stage when I was 16, I remember that sad day very, very well. When he tried to hit me again, I confronted my dad. I held the cane he was trying to use, because my dad doesn't even have any filter. My dad don't have a restriction of something he can't hit you with. It doesn't matter what it is, whatever he lays his hands on at the time when he's, I think he just channeled his frustration with his marriage and his personal life towards me. And I'm unfortunately, and I think I won't call myself unfortunate. I think I'm very fortunate, but bad for me, I was the first child. So I was always that person. I was always in his face. I was the first thing that he sees to always put that pressure on. I remember many, many bad things, you know, about my growing up. I remember he has issues with my mom, doesn't provide anything for us to eat. My mom, a typical African mother, will still find a way to prepare, make soup for his kids, for his boys then. And because myself, my two brothers are the first three. And then my sister showed up in 1990. She turned 33 years a few days ago. So she's also a woman now. So we always just laugh at this issue sometimes. And she'll give us food. She will say, when your dad comes home, he asks if you have eaten, just said yes. If he asks how, you don't have to tell him anything. But, you know, kids, if he comes and he asks, have you eaten? We'll say, yes. How did you eat? Mom gave us food. Believe it or not, my dad is going to search for whatever my mom cooked the leftover and trash it and just throw it away for whatever reason. But I just, now that I am into the space of, I don't call myself a psychologist because that's not what I don't have a degree in it, but I've read enough books to understand how this work. I've read enough books and I've had enough life experience to understand how this work. I also think he was also not brought up properly. He was also broken. So for him, he was just transferring it. But I have made it a personal challenge that I am not going to repeat the pattern. And that's why, that is where the word I used earlier, I will be the one to break that limitation, break that spirit. I am going to be vulnerable enough to tell you that based on that upbringing and the fact that I chose a different path from the family, my immediate younger brother and the one that followed, as I'm talking to you right now, we don't have no relationship. We don't talk because somehow they see me as maybe crazy because of what I'm doing. Unfortunately, I've been divorced. I never wanted to, but that's the only part of the brokenness that I think I have unfortunately inherited. And before I actually accepted that, it took a fight. I fought for my marriage with everything, but it happened. So I'm finding myself again. But believe it or not, my young brothers, they've had multiple marriages. And this is a guy, my younger brother just turned 40. I'm 3 years older. The other one is just about 37, but they've had a couple of wives because they feel that is what it should be, because that was what dad did.
Yes, right? That was what dad, so, I was just going to say.
They just feel it's normal. Fortunately for my dad today, my dad is the first generation Christian in my family. He was a staunch Muslim. This has nothing to do against Islam. Nothing. Like, Islam is not, I don't think it's a bad religion. The teachings and the doctrination was wrongly taught to many, many of our fathers, and they took it wrong. But he was the first person to convert, and I am the second generation of Christian in my family. So I think that saved me a lot of pain. But those were the things that molded me to the man I am today.
Right. Thank you for being very vulnerable about your story. It must have been such a challenging upbringing that you experienced, and I'm sorry to hear that. And that kind of gives me a better understanding, especially from our very first conversation that we had off record, when you were very passionate about saving young boys, especially from the African-American community. So, and you were, of course, passionate about doing that through the Midas Football Academy. So let's get into the Midas Football Academy. Can you tell us what you do through that academy and expatiate more on like the demographic, like the kids that you target and the realities of the lives of these children that you target and how you are helping them?
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much for this platform and for this podcast. I think what I just shared a couple of minutes ago, I never thought anybody would be able to ask me that question, or I would be able to probably share that in a public forum like this. As someone that works, and I've not shared that part, and I will share it just now because you asked the question that has to do with it. How did I even find myself being passionate going after kids? And I say, okay, you have to get it right at a certain age. When I came here after my job with the TV channel, I wanted to do something else because the job was not paying my bills enough, of course, obviously, and lack of proper immigration status back then too contributed. And that's another challenge I see, because believe it or not, some of the pattern we see from our African leaders back home, some of them that are here are repeating the same thing. Many of them somehow want to enslave you. It doesn't matter if you have a doctorate degree from some university in Nigeria or Accra or anywhere in Africa. If you come here, you don't have the necessary documentation to work, you are going to be taken advantage of. I hope anybody out there is listening and understand that. Don't take it personal. Just take it as one of those things and use it as a form of strength to continue your journey. So for me, when I was able to have my papers together, I started looking, what else can I do? And then somebody mentioned to me about being a correctional officer. And I was curious, what was that all about? So he said, you were going to work in the prison. So imagine somebody coming from a broadcasting background, a professional background, or in broadcasting, going to another profession in the paramilitary. I mean, like, you are going totally towards the opposite direction. But again, as God will always do it, because I will mention him, that's God, I think, is the only thing that have really kept me to have this chance of sharing this story today. There is not everything that happens to us is always a way for him to say, okay, I'm gathering you. I'm putting all those pieces together to make something fantastic. You know, and I think that's what he's making out of me and out of you for what you're doing. So I found myself in the correctional justice system, working for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. In 2017, I joined in the summer of 2017. It was an unbelievable sight. I'm writing a book about my experience working in the criminal justice system. I'm still in the system. So when I leave, I will publish the book, and I know it's going to be a very interesting one. This, I told the story of what I went through, but trying to put it together to answer your question. When I got into the job, the core thing that the agency is for is how to reintegrate inmates, offenders, back into society. The mission is to make sure that these guys, after doing their time, come back into the society and become a better person. when I got into the system, I paid attention, because that's another thing I think people don't do. A lot of people, and I feel sorry for people. I feel sorry for especially the younger generation, especially if we are not having this kind of conversation, if we are not sharing this kind of content, that there is a lot of challenge ahead. People just go to work in the criminal justice system and just for me to just earn my check. For me, it was more than that. It was like a mission. Because when I got there, I see that on average, if an inmate goes into the prison system and come back and has a chance to get parole and go back out, the chance of him coming back in is at over 86%. For the reason of it, I am not sure it is, but I think it's more mental than physical, because a couple of them, once they go in one time, they are locked in. So I looked at it for many, many years, like what could be the reason for this? One of the things I found out is that I work in the male facility, and I will give you this data. I'm actually reading a book right now by John Blanchard. I can't remember the full name. It's called Fatherless America. The data he gave in the book was in 1995, all the data he gave. And then he was saying 40% of American kids, 40%, as at 1995, 40% do not have their fathers at home. In 1995, I think 1995 minus 2023 that we are now is over 23 years, if I'm not mistaken. In 2023, I can tell you that figure, I hope it's not doubled, but I think it's at more than 60%. So I figure that most of the guys that are incarcerated have no father figure.
Yeah.
Because of the decision they make, even while incarcerated, you will be so shocked at some of the things they do. So I'm like, okay, this is one. The second thing I discovered is after a couple of years, you start seeing younger kids coming into the criminal justice system. Kids ages 18, 19, the age where you should be graduating high school and be planning to either wanting to go to college or trying to go to the military to serve, or you have a vocation that you have learned or you want to go and learn and have something to do for the society. But that's the age they're being sentenced. And most of the time when they come in, they are coming in for some murder charges, for something that will send them away for many years. If you are given a 50-year sentence, you will do half of that before you are considered for parole. If you're given 60-year sentence, you will do half of it. So if you are 20 years old and you come in with a 60-year sentence, you're going to be considered for a parole when you are 50 years old. How much can you do at 50? Yes, a lot of people will say, but how much can you do when you are 50? You have not learned anything. You have spent 30 years of your life being incarcerated in a 12-by-12 cell.
So yeah.
For me, those were enough eye-opener. And he just told me, son, this is your purpose. So me knowing soccer, having worked at the highest level of it and broadcasting, and now learning issues of life that is much more than any profession can give to you, just told me, this is my purpose. This is what I'm built for. And that was how Midas Football Academy was given birth to in 2019, like I said. But we did not start up until April this year, 2023, because there were so much obstacles also to register the organization as a company.
Yeah. COVID.
Then COVID came in. Then onto figuring out, are we going to be the pay-to-play system too, or are we going to be a non-profit, and then for the non-profit to be approved, it has taken a long time, but here we are, and we have a big dream. Now the plan is to use the academy. The academy is just a tool, really, but the job is much more than soccer. The job is, how can we make ourselves available to provide the mentorship that these kids do not have at home? A mom that is working herself to almost death and is the one raising two boys at the same time.
Yeah.
Even one boy is a lot of work. How is she going to be successful raising that boy? The statistics are ridiculous now. They are scary. 3 out of 10 kids are growing up with fathers in the city of Houston. I'm not talking about the United States. I'm talking about Houston. So now, like I said, if you make that number to be 100, the numbers even go down. It's about 10 out of 100 kids that are growing up with both parents at home. What happens to the rest of those 9 kids? and just watch TV today. I keep saying it, just today, no matter what time you're watching this podcast or listening, put on your TV and watch TV and tell me how many news you watch that is talking about a crime and what is the demography of the kids committing that crime. And just tell yourself, believe it or not, that we are in a crisis or not.
Yeah. That's very true. I mean, for that same reason, I actually don't watch local news.
I don't.
Because it's quite terrifying.
I watch 30 minutes. Yeah, it's 30 minutes a day and that's it.
Yeah, it's definitely quite terrifying. So yeah, thank you for really reinstating the essence of your organization. How does it work for those who are interested? Like, how do they sign up? How does the whole process start from registration to where the kids are able to play? What is the schedule? Do you guys go out and scout for these children or do their parents reach out to you? Like, how does the whole process work from start to finish? And then how is this impacting the children so far? What difference has it made?
Thank you very much. Our launch day was April 1st, 2023. We had a couple of kids coming and we had a chance to share our dream, the purpose of the academy with the community. Like I said, we are in Houston, Texas, and our registration is not complicated at all. We are a not-for-profit organization, a non-profit. So what we want to do is we want every child, once they are of that age, they can say mommy, daddy, they can know their right hand from their left hand, to come every Saturday morning, every Wednesday evening, and hopefully we're going to add another day to it, to come and play soccer, to come and form a bond among other boys. At the moment, we are only starting with boys only. We believe we're going to grow once we have our own facility. We're going to have females join us as well. I personally am on a call to go after men, to go after boys, because that is what I feel most passionate about. That is what I feel has had the most challenge. I keep using this example before I continue to answer your question. If a house is damaged at the top, they can fix it. If a house is damaged in the middle, it can be fixed. They can do some patching to it. But if it is a sign that the damage to the house is from the foundation, the entire house will have to go down. So male has to continue to have that concept and that understanding that you are the foundation of every organization of the world and of the home. It doesn't matter if you are 5 years old now, you are a foundation, and it is better for you if you have a strong foundation. It's going to shape who you are. And that's, for me, one of the reasons why we have the boys to start the academy with. So right now, the only challenge we're having now is a couple of challenges, really. We're having coaching, not volunteering, because we do not have enough money to pay. And it is just myself, my vice president, and one of the coaches that we have. So we are hoping that we'll have more people in the community to sign up that are interested or that have an idea of what coaching is. Come and help us and coach these kids, because we know this podcast will give us an opportunity to reach a larger audience, and more kids will definitely want to come in. Playing soccer is just one of it. We have two outreach programs that we do that is beyond soccer. One of them, we call it Rising Stars, because we believe every kid is a star. So we put these kids, between 80 and 100 of them, in a room once in a month, and we provide information to them. We share our knowledge, we share leadership lessons, we share resources with teenagers ages 13 and 18 years old, teenagers and young adults, to come into a room and share resources with them and tell them how they can. When you get to that stage of, I am confused, I don't know what to do, rather than for you to go join a gang or make friends that will introduce you to some new drugs to start testing it out, or you are under a immense peer pressure or from your friends buying the boots or shoes you can't afford, buying shirts you can't afford, come and learn how you can avoid all these simple loopholes that can change the trajectory of your life towards something that can destroy it. That is done once in a month. We also have our second outreach program titled Crossing Bridges. This is where we take the game of soccer to a neighborhood. We go to neighborhoods where we know there are no opportunities for them in Houston, because believe it or not, there are community like that in Houston that nobody is paying attention to them. There they have so much brokenness. Most kids in that area are in prison or their fathers are in prison. So we take soccer to the place, we find a school or any organization or a park that is willing to give us an opportunity to organize a one-day soccer tournament and let the kids just play. Just kick the games around. We let their parents come out. And at the end of the day, we encourage moms, single moms that are raising kids. It doesn't matter if you're raising a boy or a girl, but you are a single mom. But because I know the pain. Most of my colleagues that work are single mothers or single fathers. And most of the people that I know are from one single home or the other. So I know the demography of singleness is huge in our community. Yeah. And through this program, when we see kids that can play soccer, that are willing to play, we bring them into the academy all for free to come and play. And they continue to develop their game there. So like I said, soccer is just a tool that we are using, but we are doing much more work. We are teaching them leadership. We are teaching them important foundation. We are teaching them roadmap, how to find their own path in life. And we give them a chance to ask questions, tough questions, such as you have asked me on this podcast today. And we are just starting. We believe there is so much we're going to accomplish. And the vision is at the end of the day, in the next few years, hopefully we can have our own facility where we're going to have about 120 kids to be accommodated, that will be selected between ages 13, and they will graduate at the age of 18. And by the time they are graduating, they will either become a professional soccer player going to play in a different professional clubs, or they will have vocational education that they are qualified to be hired by any organization in four different fields: media and broadcasting, fashion designing, anything that is computer related, and more importantly, auto mechanics. Those are the four professions that we know that they never go out of vogue. The people are always needing them, so they will have that. And the third one, of course, is for them to have scholarship to go and get a degree and be an important citizen of the society. That is what Midas Football Academy stands for. That's our target, and that's what we intend to do.
Wow, that's so powerful. And thank you so much for inspiring the next generation through your football academy. There's nobody else in Houston, especially, that I know who's doing what you're doing. And from your past experiences, it's very obvious that you have been through a lot to know exactly the areas that need to be impacted. And that's exactly what you're doing. So thank you so, so much for sharing that. And that's very empowering. And I definitely will love for the audience to know the best way to reach you. So can you share that, please?
The Academy website is www.midasfa. Midas is spelled M-I-D-A-S, like Midas, FA.org. Once you get on the website, every other information is going to be available on it. And for me, I can be found on all social media platforms. My name, Bayonle Arashi, B-A-Y-O-N-L-E-A-R-A-S-H-I.
Thank you so much, Bayonle, for sharing that. It's been such a pleasant conversation with you. Oh my gosh. Very empowering as well. You know, you're definitely going to go far.
Thank you.
I just want to encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. Keep pushing. Keep meeting people. You never know where your breakthrough will come. And I believe that it's right up on the way.
Amen.
It's coming soon.
Amen.
You know, so thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for sharing your work. And I can wish you nothing but the best. Now, there's this thing that I'm trying to start on the platform. And luckily, I'm starting with you.
Okay.
So I'm trying to get every guest to ask a question to the next guest. So I'm not going to release what the question will be until I have the next guest. So you don't have to ask it now. You can send that to me later.
Okay.
But since you're the first guest, then I guess I will be the one to ask you the question, right? So my question is, if there was one thing, and this is directly related to your experience, if there was one thing, especially in our African community, both at home or in the diaspora, that you felt like could change, or that if it changes, it was going to make the lives of children better. What will that be?
And you said it has to be one thing?
Yes.
I think proper mentorship. It sounds like a very vague word, but it's very powerful. Very powerful. The man I have become, and I'm so thankful that I have become that man, I only had a chance to become because I was mentored by other men. Most of them are dead. Dr. Miles Monroe, God bless his soul, apart from the Holy Bible and Jesus Christ, is my biggest mentor. I always call him the father I never had. I never met him, but I have listened to more than 30 or 40 hours of his work. I've read a couple of his books, and he just simplified fatherhood. He simplified what a man should be. And that is, know God, have a purpose, grow to the maximum potential of that purpose that you found, and sow the seed back to other people so that you can bring them up. If every man or every person that finds themselves in a position of leadership can share this very little information to mentor other guys, other women, I think we will have a better society, we will have a better continent, we'll have a better country, and we'll have a better world.
Wow, powerful. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasant conversation having with you today.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to catching you again. You're welcome. I look forward to catching you again at the next African Think Tank event and also on the next episode. All right.
Definitely.
So thank you, and you have a Merry Christmas.
Have a Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for having me, and please continue doing this great work you're doing. It's needed. It's very important, and hopefully every of the audience out there can know how empowering it is, and continue to support and listen to their podcast. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening to our show. If you want to participate in the show or find out more helpful resources, then visit www.livingafricanpodcast.com for more information, or email us at hello@livingafricanpodcast.com. Also, don't forget to connect with us on all social media platforms at Living African Podcast. You can also connect with Anyo directly on Facebook or Instagram at Anyo Fombard. Thanks again for listening, and let's not forget to be more understanding and nicer to one another.